You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Battle Red Radio. This evening I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Woo!
Yeah. So football is here, and did you know that Deshaun Watson is beautiful and perfect, and it's devastating how badly the Houston Texans screwed up this past offseason, and it's even more spectacular how this offseason just keeps getting worse and worse and worse as we get further and further removed from it.
I just want to say first, I know that, you know, once again, I like to say Matt always has this really great prepared, you know, outline for the show. And he didn't give us any time to like talk about just Deshaun Watson and how we want to have his children, even though we're not biologically capable of that. So I
I'm gonna build a spaceship, fly to an alien planet so I can get the ability to like have like a uterus installed inside of me so I could have Deshaun Watson's children. That's how good he was this game.
He's ridiculous. He is just, there are just no superlatives left to describe him. And to do it with the offensive line that he's got, with the poor play calling head coach that he's got, who did a better job, we'll talk about that later, I just am in awe. And some of the throws he made yesterday, especially where he had to step up into the pocket and was throwing the ball downfield, especially to Hopkins, where he hit him in the middle of the field a couple times, was just absolute lasers. And where he's under just supreme duress and he's still able to make throws like that, it's just like my heart flutters.
Yeah. And I mean, like, those, he took some big hits on some of those throws too. And if I play quarterback, I would just lay down. I'd say, no, I'm not going to get hit by Cam Jordan running full speed on a stunt and throwing the ball deep to Hopkins. Like, it's awesome, some of the things that he's able to pull off.
It's beauty. It's truly art. Deshaun Watson has brought playing quarterback to an art form.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the offense first then. I mean, the offensively, this team is a lot of fun to watch. They scored 28 points yesterday. For going into the year, I thought they had to score a minimum of 27 points a game to even be in the conversation to play shootouts against passing offenses like the Saints have, like the Falcons should have, like I think the Panthers could have, like the Bucks may be able to pull off on paper. The Raiders passing offense already looked a lot better last night. You know, they still play the Chiefs, they play the Patriots. They play a lot of really good quarterbacks in passing offenses this season. And, you know, Gardner Vishnu was awesome, you know, last Sunday too. So I thought, like, you know, around 27, 28 points a game was what they're going to have to score to even get an opportunity to be able to play one possession games. And this happened yesterday. They scored 28 points. Deshaun Watson attempted 11 passes over 10 yards in the air and 5 over 20 last night. He completed 3 out of the 5 of his attempts over 20 yards for under 29 yards and 1 interception. And that 1 interception was by Marcus Williams, who's playing the free safety part of the field. It looked like Watson kind of underthrew it to Fuller on a corner route. He came over and undertook it. And that interception kind of ended like a drive that probably would have had points for it as well too. So like with Watson, he dealt with a lot of pressure, made a lot of great throws. But first I want to talk about the offense itself. Do you think Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly called a better offensive game plan than they previously had with Watson, especially going back to last year? And did you see anything that they left on the table at all, or any other options and possibilities to be able to move the ball, maybe get that offensive total to, you know, maybe 31 points or 34 points?
I do think there were some opportunities they left on the table. I think they got too run heavy at times. Again, even though the run game was very effective yesterday, which shocked the heck out of me, I'll tell you that. I do think that they could have done a little bit more, but a lot of the things that needed to be done on the offseason. right? Which is improving that offensive line much more than we did. And you could see the results of that when you had Watson just running for his life so often during that game. That's where you left a lot of it on the table, I think, is during those opportunities. The other thing that caught me off guard is what I saw the Saints doing toward the end of the game was only rushing three with a one spy. Mm-hmm. And they just weren't as effective that way, but they were also getting burned by Watson when they were blitzing. Watson was picking up, oh, they're blitzing in man coverage, I'm going to go run for 20 yards. So the Saints scheme changed a little bit too radically for me to adjust to that, and that threw me off guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked this offensive game plan a lot more than previously because, again, they threw the ball downfield. They attempted 11 passes over 10 yards. They attempted 5 over 20 yards. Like, that's what you have to do whenever you have guys like Hopkins and Fuller, and even Kenny Stills had that big catch in the game, too. But the receiving talent's been here, and I think last year, you know, we gave this offense a lot of grief for their how conservative they were and how ineffective they were. And I think a lot of that did have to do with, you know, losing Fuller and the receiving talent and the offensive line and everything else. I still wish that they were more aggressive last year because of it. But, you know, in a vacuum, or not necessarily in a vacuum, but whenever you, like, think about the actual situation they were in, it makes more sense now. But, yeah, like, last night, just the ability to be more aggressive, to push the ball downfield, I think was great. The one thing I thought they ran into that was a problem was that whenever they went up by, you know, two scores, they went to that same old, hey, we're going to run the ball, we're going to take our time now again, we're going to hit the brakes on this whole thing, and then here come the Saints, and now they have a lead, and now we're pushing it back, and we're revving back up again. And I think Bill O'Brien, right now, the biggest problem he has as far as an offensive play caller goes, or I guess working in unison with the offensive play caller, whoever is calling plays nowadays, it's that he adjusts to the situation, the opponent, like, way too much. His goal should just be, hey, my defense isn't going to be good. And I don't think he's realized how bad the defense is going to be this year just yet. But the defense is going to be bad, and I need to make sure I can score as many points as possible and not punt the ball whenever I have at their 40-yard line, not have possessions where I have three runs or call a screen to Hopkins on 2nd and 14 and things like that. And I think as soon as he understands that this defense is bad, I think that's the next step this offense needs to have to be able to, you know, get to 31 points a game potentially.
Yeah, and he didn't even make Bill O'Brien didn't even make that Sean Payton decision to punt on our 40 was mazeballs, or whatever it was, 45. That was like, I cannot believe Payton did that. And that almost lost the game for them, I think, in a lot of ways, because, man, they were just right there. It was like fourth. It was a 4th and 2 or 4th and mm-hmm. 1.5, and they punted. Anyway, I just want to bring that up, that hey, O'Brien did things that were kind of out of his, you know, kind of sense of, you know, his comfort areas. And that was nice to see. And that's the thing. If he continues to do that, this offense can't put up. I think this offense could put up 30-plus points a game if it wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also want to talk about the play call O'Brien had on 4th and 1 in the red zone where they ran that quarterback read. And you see, I think it was Davenport was the right defensive end of that play. And you see him shift down. He follows the handoff to the running back. And there's not another player in the alley at all whatsoever. And so whenever he keeps it, and then you have, I think it was Akins pulling back around and blew the block. And Akins made it. I mean, he's a bad blocker. I know Jordan Thomas, the same problem too. They have bodies to block, but they don't block very well. But Watson was still able to slip around that tackle attempt after the Akins missed block, jump over the defender and score, and, you know, writhe around in pain for a little bit and not be able to celebrate his work and the effort he put into it. But that was a great play call. And like I would like to see Watson used as a runner more again, but you kind of run the risk of him getting hurt. But at least like O'Brien still has it in his back pocket and using in situations where he'll use him as a runner and try to get him out in space and take advantage of, you know, heavy boxes and kind of do something out of the norm in those situations too.
Yeah, because that's a perfect example of putting so much stress on one player. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did to Marcus Davenport on that RPO. I guess it was kind of was it an option or an RPO? I don't know. But you put so much stress on that one player after he shifted down. And the second that he came in and Watson had, he just had nothing but green around that left side. It was a beautiful read by Watson. It was, you know, again, it was art. Last night was watching art.
Yeah, I can't remember what player I watched on Sunday. I watched the defensive end, though, come down on the fake and then chase out wide and tackle the quarterback on a zone read. I was like, yeah, I can't remember who it was. I'm really mad I'm blanking on the name. But I was like, this is one of the best plays I've seen in a while. I know I have it at give save whenever I start writing about what I liked about the week to pull out there. But yeah, like I love that play. I loved a lot of things that they did. Like I liked how they used Fuller in the slot a lot, and they used Hopkins in the slot a lot to be able to take advantage of PJ Williams. Williams was really bad last year, and they're having him play as their outside cornerback, and the Eli Apple trade really helped New Orleans secondary. And then Houston did a really good job at attacking P.J. Williams specifically to get Fuller open and get Hopkins open. And the weird thing with Hopkins too is he had three drops last night after being called for zero drops the year before. And so that was kind of strange, but he still caught two touchdowns and had 111 receiving yards anyways.
Yeah, and that was kind of funny because one other source said he had three drops last year, so I don't know what the true number is.
Yeah, I saw him with a drop last year in the Jets game for sure. And I was like, this looks like a drop. It's kind of like that PFF thing where they say Andrew Norwell gave up zero pressures in 2018, 2017. And I watched a Panthers game. I was like, that's a pressure right there. You know, where is it? I thought y'all are perfect, and y'all. I'm a separate PFF side note. I've been so angry lately because they're like just propagating even more propaganda about, hey, look, this is PFF's really good because we take into account this play. This should be interception. We'll just have a staff that's dropped interceptions and should end up putting into your player grade that is bad and isn't useful at all, and it's completely just like warped to make football discussion a lot worse.
Right, exactly.
let's talk about that Will Fuller throw as well, too, because I think that was kind of like the first play that really broke this offense open, where he threw a pass to Fuller for a long of 54 yards. Fuller burned I think it was P.J. Williams he burned, and he was able to jump over him and be able to come down with the ball as well, too. I was really afraid that Fuller was going to like break his collarbone whenever he came down, but he was able to stay strong and healthy and make that throw. Are you, like, every time you see Fuller make a play like that, are you really impressed to see how far he's come from his time at Notre Dame to now, where he's actually high pointing the football and making catches like that?
Yeah, because that was his reputation coming out, was he was just kind of a one-trick pony. And he's running the route tree now. He's running just about anything you want from him. And with his speed and explosiveness, he's a dangerous dude. If he's one of those guys, if he ever stays healthy, then he's going to put up huge numbers. Of course, that's the catch, because mm-hmm. he's got those little chicken legs, and but he's fast, and his hands are more than capable.
Yeah, I think he could have a 1,200-yard season if he actually stays healthy. But he only had three targets this game, which was kind of strange from Fuller. I would expect it from him to have a little bit more. I do think the offensive time kind of became a little too reliant on Hopkins. Also, that Hopkins Marshawn Lattimore battle was a lot of fun to watch. Like, Lattimore, I think, has gotten so much stronger as, like, his career has progressed over the last 2 years. And some of those closeouts he made and, like, the way he hit Hopkins on some of these targets were wild. It's like watching Jalen Ramsey out there, the way Ramsey's able to close down and just splatter receivers.
Yeah. Was it the first quarter he had a big one where he drove Hopkins back, 5 or 7 yards after the catch? That I didn't realize he played with that much power until last night, and he's a little bit scary.
Mm-hmm. So I think the big thing that's kind of come out of this game is that, yeah, it takes more than a Laremy Tunsil to have a good pass protection. The Texans traded 2 first-round picks, a second-round pick for Tunsil, and they've mortgaged their ability to add cost-effective talent around Deshaun Watson whenever he's going to be paid $35 million a year. Or even if we're looking at 2 years from now, whenever he signs a contract extension, I would guess it'd be next year. So I wouldn't say you could say like he's going to make $40 million a year, but I think he's going to probably make somewhere between $32 and $35 million whenever he gets extended. And they lost the ability to add cost-effective talent by making those picks. And so last night, Watson was sacked 6 times. He was hit 11 other times. And these pressures and hits came from all throughout the Saints' defense. They had 7 from their defensive line. They had 1 from a linebacker, from Anzalone, and they had 3 from their secondary. And so, again, like, despite adding Tunsil, the pass protection was still bad. And I think the example I want to keep going back to is everybody mentions Andrew Luck as the reason why the Texans had to make this trade, because Luck was hit 452 times. He had the football beat out of him. But Anthony Costanzo was pretty good at left tackle during the entire time. It was the rest of the offensive line that was the problem. It was Jonathan not very good, and Samson Satelli, and Joe Haig, and Joe Wright, and these sort of guys. And Watson was still hit 11 times in this one, too. So, like, are you expecting the pass protection to improve as the season goes along? Or do you think this is just going to be a lot like last year, but it's just going to be coming from the left side of the line just a little bit less?
I think it's – so what we saw last year, and I just want to go back to it, because I think, to be intellectually sound is that the offensive line did improve last year as the year went on. I mean, it never got to the point of being great, but as these guys play together and start together, they do get better as a unit. We did see that to a certain extent last year. Of course, the Colts, they came in and decided, hey, we're just going to blitz in the slot corner and kill you guys anyway, which, I mean, that was the playoff game, right? It was blitz from the slot corner. We can't stop them. So they are going to improve. How much they're going to improve, I don't think it's going to be a tremendous amount this year, because we've got a lot of guys out there who are kind of proven commodities at this point in time, right? Zach Martin's always going to be whomever Zach Martin is, and I called him Zach. Nick Martin's always going to be
I call him Doug a lot, and I don't know why. I don't know who Doug Martin. Oh, Doug Martin's the running back. Yeah, I was like, who's Doug Martin? I keep calling him that, but yeah.
That's at least Nick. I'm getting his brother. So you know, Martin's who he is. Fulton's who he is. You know, we know what these guys' upsides are at this point. Henderson's who he is. You know, Kelemente had an interesting game last night. So, you know, I don't know, like, how much upside these guys normally have. They're going to gel to a certain degree, but at least with Julian Davenport, you can say, hey, this guy has even got some upside as a football player. And so he improved. You can see the improvement as the year went on. I don't see where any of these guys on the line have that. So at one point in time, do you say, okay, I'm done with Kelemete, let's put Titus Howard there. And you can then you can say, okay, we're going to get worse for the short term, but maybe for the long term we get better. And I think we're going to have to start making those decisions at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think ultimately probably the most frustrating thing about this game from an offensive line perspective is that it's week one. They've had 5 months to try to figure out an offensive line configuration. And I guess you make it 4 months. Let's go after the draft. So they've had about 4.5 months to figure out where they want their offensive line to be for week one. It's week one, the 2019 season. They have never used this configuration before. It's Tunsil, it's Kelemente, it's Martin, it's Fulton, it's Henderson. And like, I 100% think that Bill O'Brien won this year thinking Matt Khalil could be the left tackle for this team. He gave him $7.5 million to do so. It became immediately apparent that he can't do that. And as the season got closer and closer, he tried to trade Clowney for a left tackle. It never happened. That trade never materialized, ruined their entire relationship with Clowney, led to him being traded. And then now here they are where they make this ridiculous trade for Tunsil to fill this position because they put them back themselves into a corner. And now they're kind of stuck here with it. And so now you have this offensive line that you had all summer to try, like, try it out and figure out. And now they're scrambling week one, and they're already trying to figure this thing out. I think that was kind of the biggest issue. Like, you saw New Orleans run a ton of stunts that worked out really well, and they also brought one guy from the edge and one guy from the B gap, and the Texans didn't know which guy to block. And you consistently had guys who blocked nothing, who slid down when they should have blocked their man, who blocked the outside guy instead of the inside guy, that led to Watson getting creamed as well too. And so like the blitz pickup is still an issue, and it goes back to last year as well too. And so this is what happens whenever you have an offensive line that doesn't have any continuity and lacks any guys that have actually played together for any amount of reasonable time. And again, they've had 4 months to do this, to get together and get to know each other. And I think this can be a consistent problem for, you know, at least the first four or five games of the season, and probably even longer than that too.
That's why it's so important to gel with your offensive line mates. And oh my God. It's infuriating, to say the least, the way that Bill O'Brien and Mike Devlin handled the offensive line, because they just don't see that. And I know we're probably going to get into it later. And then you do something really freaking stupid and sign Nick Martin to an extension with a lot of guaranteed money.
You got it right that time.
Yeah. Oh, no. I pulled it up to make sure I got it right. So you sign Nick Martin to guaranteed money, and it's like, why in the hell would you do that? Like, have you not watched this guy play? But here's the thing. He's a Bill O'Brien kind of guy.
Yeah.
So the talent level doesn't really matter. What matters to Bill O'Brien is that he kind of checks all the boxes, which is weird because Nick Martin, like, misses a lot of practices. He's not very good at his job, you know. Bill O'Brien, the general manager, is already a trash heap.
Yeah. Well, and whenever Seth was on the pod this summer, whenever we previewed the Texans, and, like, that preview became quickly, like, in shambles 2 weeks later. I asked him about, you know, Clowney, like, why he thought this Clowney extension didn't get done. He said, well, Clowney hasn't really been an O'Brien guy. I guess the best way to kind of describe it is that he's not in the weight room for 12 hours like J.J. Watt and that sort of thing. And they just never really gel personality-wise. But he said Nick Martin is an O'Brien guy. For whatever reason, O'Brien loves Nick Martin, And here we are with O'Brien as the Nick Martin, as the GM, extending Martin for 3 years, $33 million, $18.5 million guaranteed, which pays him like top five at his position. And we're not talking about a center who's like really good. He also plays a non-premium position. You're also talking about a team that doesn't have its first two draft picks for the next season, is missing a second round draft pick as well too. And so they don't have, like, even though they have a bunch of cap space going forward, going into next offseason, they don't really have that much because of the Watson extension without the first round picks. And so now you're tying up a bunch of money to a below average player. And like, you don't kill your cap by paying like really talented players a lot of money. You kill your cap by paying, you know, average to below average players a lot of money. And they did exactly this by extending Nick Martin for what they did it for.
And that's it. And so now when you go to extend Deshaun Watson, you're going to have this massive albatross of the 24th, 23rd best center in the league who's making all this guaranteed money. I mean, this does not make any sense on any level, and that's the sort of stuff we're going to be fighting, because we're going to have to extend Tunsil. We're going to have to extend Watson. Those two guys alone are going to break the bank.
Yeah, and even looking this year too, like, I'd rather wait, see how he plays this year, and I'd rather look at see if Fuller stays healthy or not. Like, I'd much rather have Fuller for a contract like that than have Nick Martin, for example. And I also, like you mentioned before in the threads, and I think on Twitter as well too, that, you know, Martin's their third best center. I think you can make the case that Manx is better than he is in the run game. I think Manx is the same pass protector, but he's better than him in the run game. And then Zach Fulton, I think, would be a much better center. And I think getting Fulton at center and playing somebody else at right guard, like, even Sharping would be better, because at least you have some development there as well too. But I think that's frustrating. And guess what Nick Martin's PFF grade was last year?
Oh, God, it's ready? Like 54.6. Woo! I saw it once like 2 weeks ago. And he's not even the best in the AFC South.
Yeah, he's like the fourth ranked center in the AFC South. He's worse than Ben Jones. I would think that he's, you know, like, all, like, if you think about the rest of AFC South, Brandon Linder's a really good center. Ben Jones is perfectly adequate. He got a recent extension as well too. And then you have Ryan Kelly, who's been great whenever he's been healthy.
Which, once again, just shows how ridiculous extending Nick Martin was. I'm speechless. I'm really speechless with that, because it's akin to extending, like, Salamente for more time, because, I mean, they're about the same level of player. I mean, Nick Martin's not a good center. He's Zach Fulton. I'd rather have Fulton there. I'd rather have Manx there. No.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, like, Martin's a fine pass protector, and like I've been saying, you can take any sports, like a designated hitter who bats like 250, even the batting average is antiquated, but it's really fast. Like, it's cool that he has speed on the bases, but it's not that important for the position he plays, and so I think Martin being paid as much as he is it's absurd. And so, like, not having a general manager just keeps continuing to bite Houston, especially when you consider the Clowney trade and everything else that's happened. So on offense, I guess we can stop talking about on the offensive line, going back to it, the running game was really good. Carlos Hyde at 83 yards on 10 carries. Duke Johnson at 57 yards on 9 carries. And then watching these two guys, their speed really jumped off. Like, both of them looked faster than Lamar Miller ever did whenever he was in Houston, because, like we talked about before, he gained a lot of weight and they really mismanaged how they used him here. And also, just not watching Alfred Blue is so beautiful.
Oh, like, God, it's wonderful.
I almost cried. Whenever Duke Johnson caught a dump off pass on 3rd and 7, uh-huh, broke a tackle and got a first down, it's like, this is the most beautiful. There's so many curse words I want to say, but like, it was like seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time. Like, I cried. It was so beautiful. It was sublime. I couldn't believe it. But they just have a lot more speed at that position too. And so this also came against the run defense that ranked 3rd in defensive DVOA against the run last year too. So what did you see specifically from the run game to attack New Orleans, and how were they able to create so many yards on the ground as effectively as they did?
I don't know. I'm kind of speechless, because I couldn't see. I wasn't able to pick up on anything very specifically. Like, there were just gaping holes everywhere in a lot of the runs too. Oh my gosh, I cannot remember. Cannot believe I can't remember his name. The running back for Tennessee who had like the 4.28 speed. Oh my gosh, I can't remember his name.
The Tennessee Titans?
Yeah, about a decade ago.
Chris Johnson?
Yeah, it's Chris Johnson.
CJY2K?
There were a lot of Chris Johnson kind of runs, too, where they would go nowhere for like 4 carries, and then they break off a 20-yard run. And so there, it was like, it was kind of just weird all around.
Yeah, the biggest thing I saw was that they were able to get a lot of yards from running in smaller boxes, so they weren't dealing with, you know, base defenses. They were going into nickel defenses. And the other thing I saw too is that I think Fulton had a really great game as a run blocker. Like, you would watch his backside double teams with Martin whenever they run outside zone, and you see Fulton drive the defensive end, you know, all the way to the left, and Martin's just like, you know, doesn't know what to do with all his power. He's just holding on to the chest for dear life. But Martin's staying on the block, and Fulton's able to cut off that linebacker on the play side. And so, like, I saw a lot of that. Like, and this was just watching it live and going back and watching a little bit of the condensed so far. And I think Fulton had a really nice game, though. And I think that was the second biggest thing about it. Because, again, like, going back to, you know, 2016, the last time this offensive line was any good, they haven't been able to block the second level at all whatsoever, right, which has really limited, you know, the ability for Miller to make broken tackle attempts at the second level in open field. And so, like, I know he's always finished, like, around the bottom of the league in broken tackles because of that. And so, like, you actually saw, like, Johnson one versus one. You saw Hive one versus one with space, and they were able to just really use their wheels. And I'm really excited to watch, like, Duke Johnson as the number one running back. And even Hive was a lot better than I thought he was going to be after, like you mentioned last week, and after, you know, the numbers indicate, and what I said last week as well, too, that he just hasn't been good for 3 years, especially considering his age. And he looked spry. Like, he looked healthy. He looked like he was enjoying himself.
I was speechless watching him run, because that's not the same guy I watched last couple of years. That's just not. I mean, the guy that I saw the last couple of years is slow and plodding and indecisive.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, too, is just it's not Alpha Blue, and so I think everything just looks so much better.
Yeah.
Once you get out of that light. But yeah, I'm excited to go back, and hopefully I can have enough time to watch the All-22. I still need to watch, like, Josh Allen versus the New York Jets and the Rams-Panthers game and that sort of thing first, but hopefully I can get to it, you know, sometime this week. So I think the biggest thing about this entire game, we'll talk about the defense in just a second, but Houston scored 28 points, and so they're now 4-33 in games where they allowed 22 points from the Bill O'Brien era. And that's my favorite stat, like, ever. I'm so glad Rivers found that stat. So
right.
Do you think the offense can be bumped up another level and start putting up, you know, 28 to 31 points a game? Because they did score 28 in this game, and they lost 30-28. Can they score, like, 31, 34, and those sorts of outputs to be able to make up for their defense that's probably going to be bad this year?
I think they've got the capability of it, for sure. Having Kenny Stills kind of a sub in and has a replacement for Kiki Cutie, I think, is a real help. I mean, he's not a stud, but he does give you kind of the same skill set that Cutie does. And so I really like seeing him play last night. He's going to get a lot more snaps, especially if Cutie stays out. DeAndre Carter does not suck.
He didn't do anything all yesterday, though.
He didn't do anything.
They didn't target the slot very much. Like, they didn't target the slot as far as those sort of routes. There wasn't drags and slants from the slot. It was like deeper slants and posts and seams, that sort of thing.
More of the Fuller Hopkins kind of range.
Yeah, whenever they were lined up in the slot out there.
But that throw to Stills was, man, that was perfect.
Yeah.
So I think they certainly have the capability of doing it. I mean, clearly tight end is still a big problem on the roster. But yeah, they could put up 30, 35 points a game if they wanted to. And hopefully last night shows us that maybe they want to this year. Maybe they're going to, you know, not establish the run game at all costs like they had a tendency to do since Bill O'Brien came aboard.
Yeah. And you can smell the tie-ins real fast, too. I have a prediction to make. I don't think Cahale Waring is a Bill O'Brien type of guy.
No. No, and he's already
at all whatsoever.
He's already in the doghouse. Yeah. I mean, it's like if the guys have any sort of personality whatsoever, then they're not a Bill O'Brien kind of guy.
Yeah, I think Warren may be too hot for Bill O'Brien. He's jealous of his looks or something. He's too much of a Chad for Bill O'Brien. but yeah, I mean, I think the Titans can be competent. The whole Robinson thing kind of sucks. I mean, the whole Jordan Thomas thing kind of sucks because he's a good red zone threat. He's better than Akins is, but he's on IR. And then they partly did that as well, too, so they can make room to have Fells and then whoever the other third tight end is on the roster, too. But yeah, and the Stills catch was great. It was a great route. And also, I mean, he just burned PJ Williams, and it was a perfect throw by Watson. The only thing I didn't like about it was how much they celebrated, like, after that moment and on the sideline. Because you're like, it's Drew Brees. And they have 27 seconds left. They haven't been able to cover anybody at all. They've gotten zero pass rush whatsoever. It's not over yet. Just hold on 1 second. So the Texans, they couldn't get to Drew Brees at all last night. He was sacked once. He was hit only 3 times. As I watched the game, I was counting pressures. I counted only 7 over his 43 dropbacks. Wendy Merciless had the only sack. He had a quarterback hit. He had interception. Angelo Blackson had 1 quarterback hit. New Seahawk, or I guess new ex-Seahawk, now Texan. Jacob Martin had 1 quarterback hit, too. J.J. Watt put a goose egg across the board. I think he had 0 tackles, too, 0 quarterback hits. I know the one thing he was able to do was draw a holding penalty against Ryan Ramczyk, but throughout the game, Ryan Ramczyk held him, you know, completely in place. It was like last year whenever you saw Braden Smith against J.J. Watt. Braden Smith was able to lock down him, too. And whenever Watt's not going up against Corey Robinson, Chad Wheeler, he's not putting up the same production that he's had before, too. So let's talk about Watt first. What did you see from this game, and why do you think he was as ineffective as he was?
Well, because he had no help, because they were going out of his way. They were going out of their way to make sure he was, you know, double teamed and at times kind of triple teamed. The honest truth is Watt did not look even that great last night. I mean, did he put up a single counting stat last night?
I don't believe so. I think he had 0, even 0 run tackles too.
Yeah. He just didn't look the same. And he's not a guy who's going to, at this point, I mean, J.J. Watt's 30 years old. He has hit that 30-year-old wall. And it's very much a thing that football players, when they hit 30, they're on the downside. And so I just, you know, last night's J.J. Watt performance really worried me.
Yeah, and well, on defensive ends, too, they hit their peak at 26 years old. And so Watt's on the other side of that peak, and he's also played one healthy season the last 3 years, too. With Watt, the biggest thing I saw is that Ramczyk's really good, and he met at the point of attack. Watt was able to get to the outside shoulder, and Ryan Ramczyk did a great job timing his punch, too. Like, he didn't have to deal, like, Watt was able to knock it away. That's what Watt kept trying to do, swat his punch away. But you see Ramczyk consistently vary the timing of his punch, where he held on a little bit longer, attacked a little bit sooner. And then also, I want to see Watt from the interior more. And when they start looping around the interior, there's 3 guys blocking him. And he's just like, it just reminds me of a zombie movie when there's like 100 zombies trying to my apart. Like, this is what Watt looked like on the interior, and there was no space for him either. So I don't know. Like, as whenever they play against any good, competent pass blocking tackles, then they're going to have issues.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, Merciless had the sack yesterday. We had almost no pressures, and Merciless looked like kind of like a blown assignment, even on that sack. We're not going to create much pressure. I mean, that was a really good offensive line. It's going to be one of the better ones we face, but we're going to have a really difficult time creating pressure this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the offensive line is important to talk about here, because the Saints do have a top 5 offensive line pass protecting wise over the last 5 years, and it's breezing the ball out quickly. But again, like Watt last year against good tackles, he had trouble creating pressure. And then also, you can put as much attention to him as you want because they lack a third option. Yeah, I think the thing with Watt, though, we'll have to deal with throughout, or we'll be seeing the entire year, is just that the Texans don't have like another guy at all who can take advantage of 1-on-1 opportunities whenever he does get double and triple team on the inside. And so even whenever he's there, he's going to deal with a bunch of bodies, and he doesn't have anybody else who can deal with individual blocks. Merciless was fine. Like, he had a good game. Like you mentioned, that sack against Armstead, it looked like he was blocking down a rollout, and he's able to slip around the outside and make that play behind him. And like, a lot of the argument I've seen, a lot of the discourse I've seen online is that, yeah, well, Clowney's not important because we have Merciless or whatever. And the thing is that it's okay to have more than 2 pass rushers. It's good to have 3 pass rushers. It's good to have 4 pass rushers. The more pass rushers you have is the better. And so, like, throughout this game, like, the entire time, you're like, yeah, if Clowney was here, you have Watt looping on the inside, and then he's taking 3 blockers, Clowney can actually make a play happen. And I thought, like, the one matchup available to him was to attack Eric McCoy. Years past, they've used Clowney as a kind of a dive bomb blitzer who would, you know, bungee jump right before the line of scrimmage and attack the A-gap, and they don't have that at all anymore with this team as well, too. And so that whole entire thing is frustrating. And I know, you know, like, some of the things have been said is that, you know, we're hampering too much on Clowney. That's already happened in the past, but it's important to look at for this entire season, because whenever you have Drew Brees sacked once, only 3 times, and you have a defense that relies on pressure as much as Houston's defense does, it's going to matter throughout this entire season as well, too. So, like, for this pass rush and for this defense, like, do you think this defense is going to get any better, or do you think we're just going to consistently see games where they give up 30 points a game throughout the entire year?
I don't think there's any reason to think they're going to get better. I mean, today we can talk about, you know, we cut Aaron Colvin today and replaced him with Philip Gaines. that's not a net gain for us. And, you know, as bad as Colvin has been, and he's been bad, Phillip Gaines is going to be worse. So I don't know at what point we actually get better defensively. The other big deal is, and I hate to say it because I've been, you know, I'm one of his biggest fans. That's all there is to it, is Romeo Crennel, I think, has just kind of out of touch at this point. I don't think that he quite understands that the offenses have changed as radically as they have. And then when he's given this personnel that he's given, he's got little to no speed defensively in a secondary. I think that hurts him. I do. And so he just kind of doesn't know what to do. We played a lot more man than I thought we'd play. We also gave up 510 yards last night. Mm-hmm. So my call for the 600 total yards was pretty darn close.
I think you said 500.
It was 600.
You said 600. And there, yeah. Somebody had, oh, the Ravens had 600 yards against the Dolphins. But yeah.
So, you know, it's, as part personnel, partly, you know, we don't have the personnel to play man coverage. So that was kind of a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't see how this team can even remotely improve defensively with the current personnel they have. And we're not going to get anything better than Phillip Gaines type guys off the waiver wire at this point. We aren't. We're not going to get a pass rusher. Hey, why don't we just take one in the first or second round next?
Or why don't we trade a first-round pick for... Oh, okay. And it's kind of good they don't have any draft capital they can trade away as well, too, for, like, DJ Hayden or something, you know?
Right, right. And I think that's the thing we do. I mean, if it's a Bob guy, then it's the thing we're going to do, you know? He knows where the stadium's at. He yells a lot. That's a Bill O'Brien guy. I mean, that seems to be what it takes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad Brent Scarlett's a Bill O'Brien guy, too. I he's starting in place of Clowney's, the other outside linebacker position. Just brutal, like doing nothing at all out there. I think he put up a goose egg as well, too. The interior rush, like Blackson got through one time. Reader pushed the pocket, but like there was really nothing there. The only time I ever saw any pressure was just the off occasion where the pass coverage was good and Breeze didn't have anywhere to go. And he was kind of stuck seeping out to the right side of the pocket, looking. And not finding anything at all whatsoever. But yeah, I think it's going to be bad all year. The one thing about this game, though, is us saying about the defense was bad. They did give up 3 points. They did only allow 3 points in the first half. They allowed 27 points in the second half. What was the biggest difference between the first and second half in this one?
Drew Brees throwing a red zone interception.
Yeah, that was important.
That's pretty much it. That was a brutal pick. I mean, like that was a great job by Merciless. Let's not take it away from Merciless, but that's a ball that Drew Brees doesn't normally throw. And it was incredibly off target, and I don't even know where he was trying to put it. I mean, Merciless had – it was Kamara he was trying to throw it to. Merciless had him covered perfectly. I mean, I wish our defensive backs had those kind of coverage and hand skills.
Yeah, it looked kind of like the interception Kevin Byard had of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
He looped back around and kind of, you know, like flushed the log down the toilet and made that play. What I saw was that, like, watching this game – in the first half, is like the team that's going to win this game is going to be the one who realizes running the ball is stupid. But like each team is able to break some big runs, and also just like focusing on throwing the ball, not at the line of scrimmage, not 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, but getting the ball 10 yards past, 15 yards past. And I think that was the biggest difference with Breeze, was that he started throwing the ball, you know, past that immediate first level where Cunningham can make tackles, McKinney can make tackles, where, you know, Eric Reed could come in and make some plays here there too. Because on passes that went plus over 10 yards past the line of scrimmage through the air, Breeze was 12 for 15 for 215 yards and 2 touchdowns. And the second half, that's what I saw. They actually went past that, you know, initial level, went over that portion of it. And like going back to like Crennel's defense, I think the problem that he had in this game was he had no answer at all for the interior. You can't play Joseph in the slot. I think you could play Roby in the slot, but you're having Tayshaun Gibson versus Michael Thomas in man coverage. You're having Aaron Colvin in the slot in man coverage. You had Cunningham really struggle trying to deal with Kamara in this game too, and they just didn't have an answer at all for the middle part of the field. And like whenever, and you have Reed just playing center field back there and just making a bunch of cleanup tackles. And throughout the entire game, they were relentless and ruthless at attacking that part of the field too.
Yeah, and Justin Reed did not have a good evening either. I mean, he got stuck with Ted Ginn, it seemed like, far too often. Those weren't pretty matchups that we had last night. And, you know, we talked about it. We knew that this was going to be a big problem for the game. But, man, that was even uglier than I expected. No, that was about what I expected.
Well, and Reed also, I think the worst play in the game was that Latavius Murray touchdown. He was the guy who had to make that tackle. And he looked like Ronnie Harrison against the Chiefs, where Harrison comes down, misses Sammy Watkins, and then he's gone after that point. And that was the same thing with Reed. He took a bad pursuit angle and then dove and pretty much just bounced right off his ankle, you know?
Right. No, that was terrible. I mean, that was way too easy. You don't see many easier touchdown runs than that one.
Yeah, and Murray didn't even have a good game either aside from that run. He was really, like, frustrated. He was mad out there. Like, you could kind of tell that he wanted more carries than what he got. Whenever he did carry the ball, was stuff for, like, 2 yards, 3 yards, and that sort of thing.
Well, he's also hurt.
Yeah. Well, and he ended up with 7.2 yards of carry, me saying this, because he had a long of 30 on that touchdown. But so the Saints passing game, Kamara had 7 catches on 8 targets for 72 yards. Ted Ginn, the perfect game. 7 catches on 7 targets, 101 yards, along with 41 against Eric Colvin on that four vert seam that he beat him on. He had a long of 41 that pass traveled 20 plus yards through the air. Michael Thomas, 10 of 13 for 123 yards also. And this kind of goes back to the same thing. These are all guys who attack the middle of the field. And you mentioned Colvin. Colvin was cut today. The Texans were 28th against slot receivers by DVOA last season. This was an issue going into this year. They did nothing at all to add to it. They signed Brian Body Calhoun as a camp body to compete with Colvin. He was cut. They drafted Xavier Crawford. He's, you know, I'm not expecting very much from him. And they drafted Lion Johnson the second round, but Johnson's not a guy who can play the slot at all. He has legitimate issues playing man coverage. He's like a physical guy who could want to play like cover four, cover three, but nothing in man at all. So I don't see this issue getting any better at all. I think throughout the entire year, teams are going to look to throw the ball to the center of the field. They're going to keep Roby and Joseph on the sidelines, not to mess with them at all whatsoever, and keep kind of throwing and attacking these spots, because every defender that was in that section of the field was beat. You saw Cunningham beat. You saw Gibson beat. You saw Colvin beat. You saw Reed beat. And even, you know, me saying that, like, Roby deals with problems with number one wide receivers. Joseph deals with fast receivers, so it's not like the outside solidify at all whatsoever. Like, the entire passing game is just wide open for teams to be rampant and attack, and I don't think it's going to get any better. Like, I think the Saints could have scored 45 points this game if they were throwing the ball like they did in the second half and the first half, instead of kind of dipping their toe in the water and feeling it out and running as much as they did and running so many passes at or near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that was, I remember even, you know, typing that during the hair of the dog thread, is the Saints cannot rush the ball against the Texans. And it was just stupid to try to do so early on. And then when they got away from it, they tore us apart. I mean, just to look at the last 8 minutes and 30 seconds of that game, they just did what they wanted to at will.
Yeah. And, you know, the run game too, like, you know, we talked about Houston a little bit ago about why we thought they had a pretty good running attack this game, because again, you know, Murray averaged 7.2 yards a carry. And that was because of a long of 30 yards. Alvin Kamara averaged 7.5 yards a carry. That was because of a long of 28. But if you remove these two runs, it still comes out to 4.73 yards a carry. And Kamara did break 10 tackles last night, too. So, like, I think the same thing that we talked about with why the Texans' run defense was good, or why the Texans' run offense was good, is the same thing for the Saints, too. They were able to block one guy at the second level. They ran the ball against Houston's nickel defense, and they didn't really, whenever they came up against Lyra boxes and got Houston on their base, they weren't able to stop New Orleans very well at all. And then you have Kamara, who's just like, I mean, he's absurd. Like, I've never seen him fall backwards. And like, he was just like coming to a bot, like three different bodies at once. And somehow you dig a tunnel underneath the field and then you reappear 25 yards later.
Yeah, no, the guy is insane. You know, they were talking about, by the way, the cast last night that was calling the game was terrible. They were just so freaking bad. It was ridiculous.
Oh, boogers the worst.
Oh gosh, it's so bad. And they were talking about how, you know, the Saints needed to establish the run and that sort of thing. It was so stupid. But the 10 missed tackles for Alvin Kamara. I mean, look, the Texans aren't even going to tackle well this year. You want to talk about 2018 and how we tackled?
Yeah, so they were 26th in tackle rate last year, and I thought they were a lot better at tackling than that. I've always kind of thought of them as a pretty good tackle team, but Cunningham and McKinney combined missed 25 tackles last year. Watt missed 12 tackles last year, too. And so, like, it is a good tackling team, and so I was kind of surprised by that after going back and looking at the numbers. So the Saints in the second half, are you ready for their drives?
Oh, yes. Let's get to it.
5 plays, 83 yards, touchdown. 11 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. 4 plays, 49 yards, touchdown. 4 plays, 25 yards, punt. 8 plays, 64 yards, field goal. Six plays, 37 seconds, 35 yards, field goal. And that comes out to 27 points. And the math is right.
It was at will. I mean, look at, the 11-play drive was the only one that took any, was like a challenge at all to them. Otherwise, they just did what they wanted to. Hey, we're just going to throw it again. We're just going to throw the Kamara, let him miss, 10 tackles in the game. Mike Thomas did what we thought he was going to do. Smith had that beautiful touchdown catch. That's going to be our defense this year. It's not going to be just Drew Brees. We play a lot of good quarterbacks this year. Drew Brees is just one of them.
Yeah. And this is Brees had like a good second half. Wasn't good the first half. And like, I'm still like apprehensive on the same. Like, I know like a lot of people said, well, we played a Super Bowl contender on the road, in the dome, that sort of thing. I'm still wary about the Saints, especially if their run defense isn't as great as it was going to be last year. Cause I'm still expecting, Drew Brees swoon after seven games or so. I think Sean Payton is too cute with this offense too. Like, I think it takes them too long to figure out what they should be doing to move the ball as well. So I enjoyed the game. I think they played well, but again, the issues that we saw entering into the year are still here. And I think that's kind of like the frustrating thing too, is that you have Watson being as miraculous as he is. And you know that there's this other reality out there. This this other thing, you can feel it and you know it's there. And this team should be a lot better than it is. They had such an incredible chance to get better this offseason. They didn't. And they're pretty much, they have the same problems they had last year. Secondary, offensive line, another pass rusher. The same thing this year, despite having four top 100 picks and $78 million in draft capital. They had zero players from their draft class this year playing offensive or defensive snap this game. Zero. They had some special team snaps, like Lonnie Johnson played 13. Sharping played on special teams. Tyus Howard's hurt. Cahill Waring's hurt. Crawford doesn't play at all. And then also Gillespie played some, special teams too, but zero offensive or defensive snaps for a team of four top 100 draft picks. And that's absolutely unheard of too. And so we're seeing a team with Watson, who's in his third year, who's an MVP candidate on a rookie contract. And it really doesn't matter because of the same problems that are here and how badly this team botched this entire past offseason. And it just keeps getting dumber and dumber too. Like, I thought it was bad, in May, and then it just somehow keeps getting worse. And it should be so much better. Like, there's another reality out there. I can see it. Like, I watch them play. I'm like, this should be a Super Bowl contending team, and they should have beat the Saints by 13 points, 14 points, 17 points yesterday. And so here we are where they have this miraculous play, miraculous comeback and kick a 58-yard field goal to win it,
Yeah, well, let me just pile on a little bit to how bad it's no longer the offseason technically, I guess.
I'm still going to call it. Saying, every bad personnel decision is still the offseason. Like, it's just all rolled into one thing.
I'm not even going to argue with that because it makes too much sense. So we cut Aaron Colvin today, and we got Philip Gaines. In seven games with the Bills last year when Gaines was actually seeing the field, he committed 131 yards worth of penalties.
That's a lot.
So we're not upgrading. We're not upgrading. It's just going to be the different crap.
It's also kind of funny too that he played for Buffalo, and Gaines was notorious for like finding players to Buffalo because he was there, or like being interested in players from Buffalo. And it's like Bill O'Brien logged on the computer, on Brian Gaines' little computer, and like pulled up his scouting reports. He's like, yeah, let's go this guy that Brian thought pretty okay of last year or whatever.
I just don't even. I can't even anymore. This team is so poorly mismanaged from so many standpoints. And then you have it. Look at the offense. You got Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller. And it's just frustrating. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Oh, and that was the other thing that became apparent to the game to me yesterday. It was like, after the third drive, it was like, okay, so this team has plenty of holes, has plenty of flaws. But the top end talent here is so like tremendous that they can be able to still play and compete despite everything of the other issues here, as long as they stay relatively healthy. And so again, this is a frustrating battle. Like, the game was fun yesterday. It was enjoyable. They played the Saints close. They should have won that game, whatever. But at the same time, like, it's just exasperating, just the amount of problems that they have that they shouldn't be having, and how blatant these problems were entering this offseason for them to still be here. It's just I just can't get over it. I really can't.
If a couple of dumbass bloggers in their mother's basements can see this stuff? How can the Texans front office? And we know the answer now. Brian Gain was a moron. Like, Brian Gain should not ever be in charge of anything football related ever again. I mean, we have a body of work that tells me he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
That, but I mean, we've called this. Why didn't we go sign Johnny Paradis to play center? You know, we're giving Martin more money to do the same work, but worse.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, and even
Roger Saffold, all of them go.
And even the game thing too. Like, I don't even know how. It's impossible to know how much of it was on him, because him and O'Brien were supposed to be working in tandem, and O'Brien finally stand on personnel decisions too. And so, I mean, like, I don't even know how good or bad Gain is at his job, because I liked what he did in 2018, except from the Colvin signing. But, like, this year, like, I'm perplexed by the whole thing. And I think Bill O'Brien had a lot more to do with it than just Gain, you know? And I think that whole scapegoating thing is why, even if Houston goes 6-10 this year, he'll still have a job. But the last question I have for you tonight is, the Texans' run defense last year was the best in football. It was good this game, like we mentioned, in base defense, but they're at to play against really good running backs. Like, Alvin Kamara's not the only one. They have Jackson and Fournette. Fournette looked a lot faster last week. They have Henry in Tennessee, who hit like 21 miles per hour again in that screen pass he had. Like, he weighs 260 and hits 21 miles per hour, which is absurd. Marlon Mack broke a bunch of tackles, had 160-plus yards rushing. They play Baltimore and Ingram in their stable. And so the run-heavy teams that they play have really good right running backs. They have good offensive lines, too. So do you have any concerns about this run defense throughout this year? And are you expecting it to still be maybe like a top 10 one after this game?
I still think it's going to be even a top five. I still think that highly of them, but we're not going to be the same that we were last year. Again, we were historically, you know, as a number 8 DVOA since 1986.
And that's as far back as DVOA goes, too.
As far back as it goes. And it was close to being number 1. I mean, we're talking like we're just, you know, shaving at that point in time. So this is still going to be a really good run defense. But when you start thinking about who we played last year, we played the quarterbacks that we played and the running backs we played were all kind of pretty bad. They were all the combos were bad.
They weren't great running offenses, except for Denver had a very good one, but they had to run the ball because they couldn't, because it was a safer option. Is there a better option, you know?
So I might be too high. I mean, saying they're top five might be over optimistic, especially after last night, because we're not going to be the same without Clowney. We're not going to be. Go ahead.
I was just saying, my concerns aren't in base, because I think whenever they have, you know, all their big men on the defensive line, I think they'll be good in that. Because, like, you have McKinney and Cunningham going with a guy like Reader take on double teams, that sort of thing. But whenever they're in nickel, that's where I have concerns. And without Clowney, what you're missing out on is all those just like huge negative plays, or plays where he takes out three blockers at once, and then it's just he's the grenade that blows down the door, and then the SWAT team comes running through and cleans everything up. And so they're missing that. And that also kind of directly plays into the pass defense, where you're not going to have as many second 11 down situations, or, you know, third and nine. You're going to have more second and sixes, more, you know, third and fours, and that sort of thing too. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a feel for it. I'd still guess it'd be a top 10 one like I picked last week. I don't want to go to, like, be pulled so much in one direction because of one game. But I have, like, concerns now that I didn't have before entering this game, too.
You're right. I did. I thought we were going to be better against it, but we're not. The difference is just too stark. It's too striking that Clowney blew a lot of stuff up. And you know, look what he did in Seattle. He had a great game and limited snaps in Seattle. He picked up a sack. He got a batted pass. You know, Clowney is a really good football player.
Yeah. Well, in the Clowney too, I feel like I'm talking about like an ex-girlfriend. Wait, like I'm on like a first date and I'm just talking about my ex-girlfriend the entire time. But Clowney, like in that game, he hadn't played that defense before. He hadn't played it all too. And like last year, he wasn't good for the first 3 weeks of the season. And then also he turned it all on week 4. And so like I expect for Clowney to be a lot better. But yeah, he was good against Cincinnati. He kind of disappeared in the second half. It looked like he got tired. But he was able to, you know, do that same swipe, cross-swim combination where he swipes the punch away and swims over the top. That interception he almost had came on a screen pass that he kind of read and sat. And it was like he probably should have picked that off and scored on it too. And just like the amount of like times he beats the block immediately is charging for a sack and the quarterback gets it out. It's kind of unfair. Like, I don't know. I think of all the guys who out there who should have more sacks, Clowney's number one. And I saw some stat yesterday that he led the league in pass blocking win rate in that game too, where he's like beating his block right. and has a pass to the quarterback, but the ball is out before it. And the Bengals had a cool game plan. Like they really spread the ball out. They ran like a lot of five wide receiver sets against the Seahawks zone defense and found a lot of holes in the zone that one. And Dalton threw for 450 yards. And like again, like the argument against Clowney is by people who are just looking at the box score, not watching the game at all, because he did have a very good game yesterday. Not as good as he would have had if he had a whole summer in Houston coming into this year at the age of 26 at his prime. But he had a very good game, and I'm still like disgusted Seahawks fans get to enjoy it instead of Houston like getting another year of Watt and Clowney. And like Houston's also less fun to watch too without him too. And that's kind of the other downside to that whole miserable trade and everything else. And where was Barkavius Mingo yesterday? Is he out there? Where was he?
I don't think he's played a snap. I didn't look at the snap counts yet, but I don't think he played a single snap.
Yeah, whatever.
What a waste. He was just, you know, he hasn't been a good football player ever since college, so whatever.
Yeah, I was excited for him whenever he got drafted by Cleveland just because his name's Barkavius. He's playing for the Browns and everything else. Like, oh, it's just like such a perfect name, plays combination, but yeah, he's bad. But yeah, that's all. Is there anything else you want to bring up for this game at all? You have anything else weighing on your tongue at all?
Nah, I think that's it.
Okay, well, cool. Well, so that's all we have for the show tonight. We'll try to do a game preview sometime later on this week because the Texans do play at 12 o'clock on Sunday against Gardner Vishnu and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And it's a must. I don't know. You can't really call it a must-win game yet. I think if you're 0-2 entering week 3, it's pretty much a must-win game. But it's like a game I think Houston has to win if they're going to be a playoff team this year. Well, they have to be all the run-heavy teams that they can, and then win enough of these close shootout games to have a shot at it. But yeah, like after watching Vishnu, I think it's going to be a really fun time on Sunday.
Yeah, and the dude looked like competent. It was crazy.
Yeah, and like he also, it wasn't all like easy short throws and a blowout at all.
No.
These are some sideline heaves. Like these are some windows that he was making some throws to. And so I'm excited to write the game preview for it because I have a bunch of like fun gifts from it. And DJ Chark, like he had one catch last year against Kansas City. I was like, this guy, that's something right there. And here he is, and he's like a top 10 wide receiver, which is fun too.
He looked really good. I mean, he's a big, tall, fast dude.
Yeah, he's a lot faster than he was last year. And same with Sammy Watkins too. Like Watkins has never moved that well before.
No,
like he never has.
He never had that quicks. That's the Chiefs are so scary. Yeah. The Chiefs are so freaking scary.
And even without Hill, they're gonna be fine. But yeah, I have Watkins in three fantasy leagues. All three leagues I play him. I had him on the bench in all three. I still went 2-1, but it's just like to have 55 points sitting there, you know.
Yeah. Nobody cares about your fantasy team.
I know. I just had to say it though.
Right. Right. Oh, I'm hip.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I beat Brett.
Good. So, good.
Yeah. Good. And I taunted him with it on Twitter.
I'm glad after how like he made us wait 35 minutes for him to log on. I'm glad you beat him.
Right.
He also posted some tweet like about like his team or whatever. He's like, this is my team in this league. I'm like, you have the fourth best team in this league. Like why don't you post the good teams in there? But yeah, so it's fun. It's a fun league. I'm really hoping I can cut the sleeves off this shirt this year.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I'm so tired of being a bridesmaid in it. But so anyways, thank you for listening to Smell Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. And again, sometime this week we'll try to get a preview show done. I am gonna go see the Texas Rangers play outside, out of the air conditioning for one last time. So I'm gonna try to do my best to see if we can get a show going for a preview for the Jags game this week.
Woo!
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. live only on Netflix.